niemals kapitulieren wird, dass das heutige Deutsche Reich, wie alle großen Staaten der Vergangenheit, auf seinem Weg Rückschlägen ausgesetzt sein mag, dass es aber nie diesen Weg verlassen wird.
To which the Soviets replied with a decisive blow in the east. Fear of the Red Army drove millions of people to flight. Flight on frozen roads. Across the frozen lagoons of the Baltic. To the ports offering rescue by sea.
Der Führer, dessen Leben Tag und Nacht in ununterbrochener Arbeit und Sorge dem Schicksalskampf der deutschen Nation geweiht ist, besucht einen Divisionsgefechtsstand im Osten. Dem Führer werden die Offiziere...
The commander fled too. He now commanded from Berlin. In an hour, he could be at the front. From his people he demanded still more sacrifice.
Ich erwarte von jedem Deutschen, dass deshalb seine Pflicht bis zum Äußersten erfüllt. Dass jedes Opfer, das von ihm gefordert wird und werden muss, auf sich nimmt.
Every sacrifice was pointless. With their superior strength, the Red Army blasted their way into Hitler's capital. At the end, he waged the war on his own doorstep. The commander was finished. What remained was blind destruction.
All military transport, communications, industrial and supply facilities within the Reich that may be useful to the enemy are to be destroyed.
The order came too late, as did the directive to turn all civilians at the front out of their homes and have them try their luck in the open. On these streets in Berlin, the people once acclaimed him. He had betrayed them. But he could not annihilate them. A last roll call in his own backyard. Medals for boy soldiers. They are Hitler's last victims. Brought up to believe in him, they are now to die for him.
Der Nationalsozialismus mit Hitler als Führer war mein Leben. Es schmerzt immer wieder, aber es schmerzt nicht so wie damals. Es ist ein anderer Schmerz. Es ist der Schmerz, nicht nachgefragt zu haben. Es ist der Schmerz, die Hände an die Hosen gelegt zu haben, sich zum Werkzeug machen lassen.
Das ist das, was ich Hitler auch am meisten vorwerfe, dass er die Jugend verführt hat und dass er sie um ihre Jugend betrogen hat und dass er vielen auch das Leben genommen hat. Das waren sehr schmerzliche Erfahrungen. Durch viele Gespräche ist das zustande gekommen und eben auch dadurch, dass man anfing nachzudenken, was ist das denn für ein Wahnsinn, dieser ganze Krieg.
Man war letztendlich so kriegsmüde geworden, und war froh, dass man es bisher überstanden hatte, dass man jetzt wünschte, der Krieg sollte zu Ende sein. Und er kann eigentlich nur zu Ende sein, wenn derjenige, der ihn hervorgerufen hat, Hitler, weg ist.
Without their obedience, Hitler could not have waged his war. generals failed lamentably. The ordinary soldiers were deceived twice over.
Ein Täuscher, er war ein Lüger, aber kein Blender. Aber ein genialer Täuscher.
Meiner Erkenntnis, die sich nur auf die letzten Wochen des Krieges bezog, war Hitler insofern geistig krank, dass er in einer hypertrophen Selbstidentifikation mit dem deutschen Volke lebte. Er war subjektiv überzeugt, dass mit seinem Tode und mit dem Ende seiner Ideologie das deutsche Volk keine Überlebensmöglichkeit mehr hätte.
He was wrong about that too. The people paid scant attention to his death in the bunker. His Reich sank with him. Without him, the center of all evil emotions, Nazi domination vanished into thin air like a ghost, a nightmare which haunts us still. Final account, an ocean of blood and tears. From Stalingrad to Brest, from Dachau to Auschwitz. 40 million dead.
Om de tyska ubåtarna.
Dönitz, as head of the Navy, now moved in the upper echelons of the German High Command. Although he remained chief of the U-boats, he was increasingly remote from their daily operations, and the personal contact with his men was fast fading. Dönitz had entrusted the production of his new secret submarine, the Type 21, to Albert Speer, German Minister for Armaments and Munitions. Until they were ready, however, Dönitz's crews had to sail out in their obsolescent machines to face the Allied onslaught.
We faced the enemy in 1944 the same way as we faced it in 1940. But because of the spirit in which we were trained, because of the strength of the German upbringing within us, we were ready to commit harakiri, just like the Japanese committed kamikaze suicide. We did exactly the same thing, only in a slightly different way. And all of our crews were ready to commit suicide for the Führer and for the Fatherland. Yes, we did. We tried to commit suicide. We went out again and again in our attempt to commit suicide because it was nothing else during the last couple of years of the war. There was no sense in going out to win the war. It was lost. But we couldn't tell our men. We could not even suggest it to ourselves. And we had to go on. And we followed what we were trained to do, to commit suicide. Most of us succeeded. Fortunately, I did not succeed. And I brought my men home. And I'm proud.
Dönitz said to his U-boatmen, by continuing the fight, you are tying down Allied resources that could otherwise be used against Germany. And in effect, he's saying, you are buying time. You are, in effect, being almost sacrificed until we have the kind of U-boats available that we can carry on the fight in a new campaign with renewed vigor and strength through a brand new type of submarine, which will defeat the new Allied countermeasures.
But that new submarine was not ready, and in the first 3 months of 1944, Dönitz lost 33 boats. The one device that might have stemmed the losses, the Schnorkel, was slow in being fitted to the Type 7s. This was a breathing tube that allowed the U-boat to take in air and charge its batteries without surfacing. In 1944, Allied air cover of the oceans became so intense that a U-boat's chance of survival without this device was extremely poor. Anglo-American mastery over the U-boat was defining the course of World War II. It made it possible to safely transport by sea to Britain an American expeditionary force of 300,000 men and the millions of tons of war materials needed for the Allied landings in France. It meant in the months before D-Day, in June 1944, the Allies were able to run 100 ship convoys to Britain without loss. But Dönitz still planned to redress that balance. Slipping quietly into the water in Hamburg a few days before D-Day on its first sea trials was Dönitz's long-awaited wonder weapon, the Type 21 Unterseeboot.
Type 21 was the first real submarine in the history of naval warfare. It was no longer forced to surface to charge batteries, but it could stay for extended periods underwater. So a new era in the U-boat warfare started. It was the era of total underwater war.
Before, their submarines had been basically surface ships that would occasionally submerge. They built a submarine that was intended to remain submerged all the time.
The main advantages of the Type 21 over the existing U-boat Types 7 and Type 9 were, first, the extended range underwater, the increased underwater speed, the increased diving depth for these U-boats, and, of course, the greater firepower, because they had 6 bow tubes and were capable of firing a total number of 18 torpedoes within less than 20 minutes.
It had a snorkel built into it, but it was built in telescopic, like a periscope. It went straight up and down. And this Type 21 submarine was bigger, much, much faster. It could go up to about 16 or 17 knots submerged, and it could run on batteries for several hours at 16 knots, which is an amazing development. But the fundamental thing was it could remain submerged and could make high-speed submerged.
The Allied fear that the new boat would render all their anti-submarine measures ineffective prompted massive aerial bombing raids of the Type 21 construction yards in Hamburg, Bremen, and Danzig, where final assembly of the U-boats took place. Despite the havoc this caused, by the beginning of 1945, 90 boats had been completed and Dönitz was planning a return to the Atlantic in a new March offensive. Meanwhile, his men still went to war in the obsolete Type 7s and 9s. In the final 6 months of 1944, Dönitz lost 112 U-boats at sea. Life expectancy for U-boat men on patrol had sunk to 2 months, and still they went out.
It is difficult to understand today that we did what we did. And yet we did it without questioning, without asking. We did it because we were trained to do it. We were brought up in a rigid society that knew nothing else but to obey an order, whether the order was right or wrong. The losses at sea were quite obvious, especially when you were out on a mission. You could hear of their last message. It was a standing order to send a message, if you could, of your own demise. And when we came back to port, we found that our pens were deserted. So you realize that the losses were extraordinary, but you try to avoid thinking about it. It was quite obvious that the intent was to send our men out to die at sea.
Dönitz gave a speech once where he spoke of the fanatical willingness to die. Of the fanatical willingness to die. And these young people had been imbued with this. It was clear to them that their chances out there weren't great, but they were nevertheless willing to die.
As far as the Navy was concerned, service itself was an end in itself. Service for the fatherland was an end in itself, irrespective of whether the National Socialist Workers' Party was at the helm or any other party that they could have imagined.
Political ideology, it would seem, played a minor role in life aboard a U-boat.
There were individuals on board a particular U-boat who might be known to be an enthusiastic Nazi. And typically, people would know what to talk about around him or what to avoid. That you really didn't have this kind of politicization of a U-boat crewman that some people seem to think did occur. The fact that they were such efficient fighters, the fact that they put up with the losses they did, make them appear to be fanatical. And yet all of my experiences, both with individuals and with primary source documentation, does not support that contention at all.
At Winston Churchill's secret underground headquarters in London, the scene of so many uncertain moments in the U-boat war, a new confidence prevailed. At the heart of Allied success lay that great transatlantic partnership of Churchill and Roosevelt, and their joint determination for 5.5 years that the goods would be delivered and the rattlesnakes of the sea would be vanquished. The success of the Normandy landings, the re-establishing of the Western Front, and the clearing of the way for an eventual invasion of Germany itself all stemmed from the defeat of Dönitz's U-boats in the Atlantic and his failure to sever those vital supply lines between Britain and North America. By March 1945, Dönitz's plans for a new offensive with the Type 21 had crumbled. The Russian army had taken Danzig. The Western Allies had crossed the Rhine and were mounting devastating bombing raids on Bremen and Hamburg. At the end of April 1945, following Hitler's suicide, Dönitz became German head of state and began to negotiate the nation's unconditional surrender. On the 4th of May, he sent out a special message to his beloved U-boats. Undefeated and spotless, you lay down your arms after a heroic battle without equal. A continuation of our fight is no longer possible.
It is an index of the U-boat crew morale that on the last day of the war, in May 1945, there were still 43 U-boats at sea looking for targets.
They were stunned by Dönitz's order, some believing it was a hoax by the Allies. But the majority surrendered obediently, a few in American waters off New Jersey and Maine, but the majority around the British Isles. Over 1,150 U-boats had been built during World War II. At the war's end, almost 800 had been sunk or destroyed. The U-boat crews came ashore for the last time, their iron discipline intact.
The majority of the U-boats which surrendered were moored either at Lissahelly in Northern Ireland or at Cairn Ryan in the southwest of Scotland. At Lissahelly we had between 45 and 55, and they were moored in trots of 5 or 6 abreast. The main work of maintaining them was carried out by German crews. They sang vigorously as they were marched down in the mornings to the boats, and quite likely sang again as they came back to their quarters. They still regarded their U-boats as theirs, and they were proud of them and wanted to see that they were maintained to the necessary standards. The major Allied governments, United States, United Kingdom, and Russia, agreed that they would each be entitled to take 6 U-boats and that the remainder would be scuttled in the North Atlantic in deep water. The main object was to dispose of them so that they could not be used offensively again by any country.
Dönitz was tried by the Allies at Nuremberg and sent to Spandau prison for 10 years. He served his full sentence and was released in 1956. When he died on Christmas Eve, 1980, he was refused a state funeral by the German government. He lies buried with his wife and two sons, both of whom were killed at sea during the war, in this village cemetery near Hamburg. And what of those who served their beloved Grand Admiral so loyally?
The U-boat effort was undertaken with such faith, with such zeal, with such superhuman effort, that these men waged a campaign of unbelievable exertion of energy and will and morale. The losses they suffered were so horrific. 32,000 killed or captured out of a total force of 40,000. A rate loss that's matched only by the kamikazes in the Pacific during the end of World War II. And yet they were still able to perform, they were still fighting up to the last day. And in the end, it was for a regime that represented what? Auschwitz, Buchenwald. And that, I think, has been the difficulty that U-boat submariners, that U-boat crewmen today still have to deal with.
The last of the iron coffins completes a long sea journey. Its final resting place, ironically, is Liverpool, the city that masterminded the U-boat's defeat, where it is to go on public display. It comes not as a trophy of war, but as a reminder to future generations of the fearsome threat the U-boats posed. Above all, it is a lasting testimony to the courage, fortitude, and sacrifice of the thousands of individuals on the Allied side, whose united efforts eventually ensured the U-boats' decisive and very necessary defeat.
Spelad från Discovery TV i maj 1997.